From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Could Hillary Clinton's attack on Tulsi Gabbard as a Russian asset shake up the Democratic presidential campaign? Plus, Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar may be getting a second look in Iowa. And Elizabeth Warren has another plan, this one for education, K through 12 education at the cost of $800 billion. Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot with the Wall Street Journal. Here with Kyle Peterson. Hello, Kyle.
Hello, hello.
And Bill McGurn. Bill, how are you?
Okay.
So let's start with the high entertainment of the Tulsi Gabbard-Hillary Clinton exchange, in which the former First Lady of the United States, two-time presidential candidate Hillary Clinton, attacked Tulsi Gabbard on a podcast with David Plouffe, the former Obama political impresario, suggesting that Tulsi Gabbard didn't mention her by name, but by clear implication, is a Bill a Russian asset, and that they are grooming her to run as a third-party candidate in 2020 in order to assist in the election of re-election of Donald J. Trump. And she said that Jill Stein, who had been the Green Party candidate in 2016, of course, was a Russian asset. And Tulsi Gabbard fired back in ferocious terms, calling her a warmonger and everything else. And I guess Tulsi must think, this is the best thing that's happened to me in a long time. I think maybe catapult me back into the debate stage. She hasn't qualified yet for November.
Yeah, I think you're right, Paul, because her campaign was going nowhere. She's an attractive woman. She's an Iraq combat vet who still serves in the Army National Guard. But she's really an outlier in her party. And you see that in her her poll numbers, which were roughly 2%, some more on the underside of 2%. So for the next debate, the candidates have to get a certain amount of donors, which is been lifted. She's met that. But you either have to get 4 DNC-approved polls, national polls showing you have 3% or above, or 2 polls from the early states like Iowa and New Hampshire showing you at 5%. So if she gets to that debate stage, it will be because Hillary Clinton put her there. I mean, as you say, her attacks were ferocious because first she tweeted something calling Mrs. Clinton, a warmonger and a source of corruption and so forth.
Corruption, yes, that was a key word.
And then on Sunday, she fired back with the video complaining about a new McCarthyism and so forth. I think it's not going to last that long. But now you do see, you know, initially the other candidates didn't really come to her aid except for Beto O'Rourke. And, you know, Pete Buttigieg tried to kind of neutral on
it. As Pete Buttigieg often is.
And then he found, I think, people appreciated sticking up for. But the most interesting one was last night, Bernie Sanders did defend her. And he really had to, because in 2016, and this is the source of Mrs. Clinton's problem, she was at the DNC. I think she was vice chairman. And she complained that they weren't having enough debates. And the idea was they were limiting the debates to help Mrs. Clinton, to make this a coronation and not subject her to a beatdown.
As she ran against Bernie Sanders.
Tulsi Gabbard said she was excluded from the first debate, from attending. And then there was a whole kerfuffle and that kind of went away. But then a few months later, she resigned and endorsed Bernie Sanders. And she says Mrs. Clinton and her friends have never forgiven her for that. So Bernie did defend her, stood up for her. I mean,
isn't it clear that she hasn't ever forgiven Tulsi Gabbard?
Right.
The remarks last week
right.
make clear she hasn't. And we know the Clintons never forget.
Right. They keep grudges. But the other thing that's sort of lost in this, I mean, we could talk about the politics, but it is an outrageous charge to just see Russian assets. I mean, we just had the Mueller report for all these years. You know, Mrs. Clinton had called Trump a puppet. I don't think she necessarily called him an asset. But the Jill Stein thing, you know, she's since tried to walk back her remarks and saying it was Republicans grooming a third-party candidate, not the Russians. But by the language that you mentioned, she said that Jill Stein was also a Russian asset. She clearly was referring to Tulsi Gabbard. And it's just an outrageous thing. I remember the day when it was thought outrageous to label people as agents of foreign governments without any evidence.
Well, and I think, Kyle, this suggests to me the degree to which the idea that Hillary Clinton was not responsible for her own defeat still persists in the Democratic Party. In fact, it's the mainstream position, I think. She goes on with David Plouffe, who didn't disagree with her on, and he was an Obama guy. They still don't believe, they still can't fathom that Hillary Clinton lost to that guy, Donald Trump.
And to that point, she has also been talking about voter suppression. So she was at an event this past weekend and was asked about 2016. You know, of course, she lost the state of Wisconsin in the election. Reading, this is quoted in the Washington Free Beacon. Hillary Clinton says, quote, "Wisconsin is a great example of where tens of thousands of people were not able to vote. So we know that happened. We have to keep fighting and we have to keep putting it on the front burner." It's an inability. I mean, so a nonpartisan fact-checking organizations have said that that's not true. It's an inability to reckon with the fact that she lost that race. And I think it's quite strange, the inability of people who are in public life to ever just retire and go see their grandkids and take up snorkeling. I mean, why she feels the need to inject herself into the 2020 race in this way is very strange to
me. I'll tell you, psychologically, if you had lost to Donald Trump, I think you'd have a hard time getting over it, too. It's so easy to blame the Russians, but that is a problem for the Democrats, because to the extent to which you do not confront the actual reasons you lost, you have a tendency to maybe make the same mistakes again. Let's talk the rise in the polls, a little boomlet here in a poll by Pete Buttigieg after his debate performance in Iowa. The mayor of South Bend doing reasonably well, kind of atop now the second tier of candidates behind Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and Joe Biden, and maybe has a chance to now gain some ground after impressive performances in the debate. And then Amy Klobuchar, the senator from Minnesota. She's also getting a little bit better press coverage than she has received of late. A suggestion maybe she can, there's a front page story in the printed version of the New York Times saying nice things about her, which they usually reserve for Elizabeth Warren. So maybe there's something there, Bill.
Yeah, I thought in the last debate that in some ways that Mayor Pete did the best, especially when he was talking about American purpose and foreign policy. He's pretty good on TV. It's a good forum for him because he's somewhat unflappable. You know, he can appeal to people. So I'm not surprised that he's rising based on that performance. I think he has two major anchors around him as he was former Navy veteran. One is the city he manages is just in terrible straits, South Bend. There was a lot of pretense that it's rising, but I was just a guest of the city of South Bend a week ago, and there was some shooting at a gas station, two people shot. I mean, I think if he really moves into serious territory, there'll be a lot more attention there. He's plagued by local versions of Black Lives Matter because most of the shooting victims and murder victims in that city are African American. So I think he'll have that. And he also just, as this is a larger issue, he doesn't attract Black voters. So I have a hard time seeing as getting the presidential nomination, but even the vice presidential nomination, if it's Biden, Warren, or Bernie, because I think they might have a little trouble with that vote too, and I don't think he brings anything to the table.
Kyle, what about Klobuchar?
I think she is in an interesting position because she is an alternative that is not polling very well, who has some substance to her. I mean, she's a senator. As she often says, she wins every congressional district in the state when she runs. I think in one of the recent debates, she said, "I won Michelle Bachmann's district." So she's popular at home. She's in a state neighboring to Iowa. And she has a good story to tell. The polling does not not show that, it does not reflect that yet. So in the Real Clear average, the last time I checked, I think she was at 1.8%. And so her challenge is she really has to make that move in the next, you know, 3 or 4 weeks if she's going to get on the next debate stage in November. And unless she does that, it's hard to see how she can push forward.
We're talking about the Democratic presidential primaries, and you're listening to Potomac Watch from The Wall Street Journal.
AI may be the most important new computer technology ever, but AI needs a lot of processing speed, and that gets expensive fast. Upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is the single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. Do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic. Take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/wallstreet. Oracle.com/wallstreet.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with Bill McGurn and Kyle Peterson. The argument, gentlemen, for a breakthrough for one of the, for either Amy Klobuchar or a Pete Buttigieg in Iowa, is goes something like this. Joe Biden is going to fade because of the many reasons that he just doesn't seem up to the job anymore. He's got the liability now of his son Biden, Hunter's problems in Ukraine. That'll all come out in impeachment. As Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders continue to divide the progressive wing of the party, a lot of voters who will look at Democratic voters will look at Elizabeth Warren and say, wow, she could lose to Donald Trump. Too far left, too many policy liabilities like Medicare for all. So who do we turn? Then you go to a Pete Buttigieg, you go to an Amy Klobuchar. They've been, for the first time, I think, really consciously running to the middle, particularly for the first time for Pete, Mayor Pete. Klobuchar has been doing it a little bit more previously. But the first time in the last debate, they really tried to contrast themselves to the progressive agenda that Warren and Sanders have been having on Medicare, on other things. And Medicare for All. And as the Iowa caucuses approach, we have often in history seen surprise candidates run up to the top out of nowhere. So that's the argument. And maybe, and these are both serious people. Klobuchar, in particular, is a senator of some standing.
Yeah, I think you're right. That look, it's always a mistake to count people out early on, right? Because people make gaffes and drop out. Some drop out of campaigns too early, you know, before their moment comes. The problem is, I feel that when I comment on the Democrats, it's like when Democrats would comment on the Republican Party and say, you know, John Huntsman's making really good points and stuff. Like the Democratic voters don't
You're
really
a lot
care.
More sincere than that, Bill. A lot more sincere than that.
But the Democrats, the problem is these candidates aren't really appealing to the Democrats. I mean, I thought John Delaney made some good points when he was running. Andrew Yang, I think, makes some good points and so forth. But I don't think those candidates have the heart of the Democratic voter. And that's, I think, the problem for the Amy Klobuchars and stuff, who's generally regarded as more sensible. And I think in the Senate has a record where she's willing to accommodate, you know, to compromise and make
Bill,
a deal.
Bill, just think about that statement, though. Klobuchar is from Minnesota. We're not talking right. about Georgia. She's a progressive senator by any reasonable definition right. of progressive. And she is, Walter Mondale, she's really a kind of an updated version of Walter Mondale. And you're saying that she doesn't have the heartbeat of the Democratic primary?
It doesn't look that way. She's having a hard time getting into the debate. I think the big question behind what you're asking is, if Joe Biden is fading, as I think he is, because I do think he has problems remembering and so forth, I don't think he's inspiring. You're always kind of holding your breath to see what he's going to do. The real question is, where do his black voters go? Because they're really what's holding him up. You know, the idea that he might not do as well in Iowa, but in South Carolina. And a lot of those voters are more, they're not as liberal as the progressive wing. That's the
it's
irony.
True.
And so who's going to get them? And it's not immediately apparent because Kamala Harris isn't getting them now, right? And Cory Booker doesn't seem to be getting them either. So the question is, if Joe dropped out, who would pick up those voters? Like, where would they turn? Or would they just be diffused over all the
And your argument is that Mayor Pete just doesn't have the
I don't
the, to keep
but I think
get
he's
him.
Not the only one. I mean, I think Bernie has a problem with those voters, and I think Elizabeth Warren has a problem with those voters too.
I think each of them have their challenges. I mean, that story is plausible, but on Mayor Pete's side, I mean, he first of all, if you ask if people who support him who their second choice is, they generally most of them say Elizabeth Warren. So there is more overlap there than I think the general narrative gives credit for, and less with him and Biden. And the second is that you know, Biden does very well, better among older voters than he does overall, and the exact opposite is true for Mayor Pete. And the idea that, you know, a 70-year-old in Iowa is going to look at this 37-year-old mayor from South Bend and think that's my guy, I think that's a challenge. Klobuchar, on the other side, I mean, I think she's that story works better, at least in my mind, that I could see that happening. But the question is, where is it? I mean, she has been this alternative, taking these moderate stances throughout all these debates, and it has not translated into a significant bump in her polling. So, I mean, maybe if Joe Biden really collapses, she could sweep up some of those voters. But it just is not. If the story is that she's going to rise and be the moderate alternative, I don't know why it hasn't happened yet.
All right, let's turn to Elizabeth Warren. She is now as close as a front runner as this campaign has, and she is. She came out this week with another plan. I say another because she has something like 50 others previously, and this one is for K-12 education, and it includes a plan to spend $800 billion more over 10 years, which where I come from is real money. $800 billion, that includes $450 billion over 10 years, which would quadruple the amount of money for Title I schools for low-income students. She'd spend another $200 billion more on students with disabilities. She'd spend $100 billion in other various other grants and devote $50 billion for school buildings to new and upgraded. So that's all for K-12, which is a huge increment of money. Now, if you add that to her other spending, she's already got $1.07 trillion for childcare, universal childcare plan, $610 billion for free college tuition, and her plan to cancel $640 billion in student debt. Add on this $800 billion, and you know what that adds up to? The $2.75 trillion that she says the wealth tax she's imposing is going to finance. Bill, my reaction is that's going to be the hardest working wealth tax in the history of wealth taxes, if to generate all that money for all those programs.
Yeah, I think the editorial the Journal carried today kind of summarized. There are lots of problems with this. One, the assumption it's going to bring in all the money that it promised, and it's not going to have an effect on people leaving or hiding their cash somewhere. Two, that it would be spent effectively. Three, just upending the role of states in this. It's just another confirmation about how expensive things get when they're free, as Elizabeth Warren wants. So I think this appeals to Democrats in a way, but it should terrify the rest of us. I don't have the numbers, but my suspicion is if you plotted federal spending on education, K-12, forget about college, and then you tracked performance, performance has gone down. I mean,
I think that's actually true. If you look at spending increases since the Nation at Risk report, right, in the early 1980s,
which was dire, right? That was right, saying we were in really bad shape. And then also, it's kind of interesting for Warren too, coming from Massachusetts, because if you remember the debate over the texts and everything that they had, Massachusetts actually had a pretty good system, right? In the one size fits all, a national standard, they would lose out. They were doing pretty well. This, I think, is just more homogenizing all the education. And of course, it's applauded by the teachers' unions.
They're very happy, Bill.
Yes, because there's provisions about closing the gap on teacher pay. and hurting charters, right? Less money for charters.
Yeah, she would eliminate all federal spending for charter schools, and she would have a ban, a national ban on for-profit charters, which right. is not most charters are nonprofit, right. are public schools, but she nonetheless would ban for-profit charters. So the unions are very happy with all of this. The NEA put out a statement saying, this is a tremendous contribution to her concern, shows her concern for students. I guess the question is, I mean, this list I read has an eye glaze over quality. Once you start saying $800 billion here, $1 trillion there, people begin to say, well, come on. Is this real or you can't possibly be serious.
Well, and that's only the beginning. So I've been reading through the 50-something plans that are on her website, and let me give you a few more. So we have a $3 trillion in Green New Deal, $2 trillion for a green manufacturing plan. The federal government is going to replace every voting machine in the country with state-of-the-art equipment. We're going to make national parks free. We're going to double the size of the Foreign Service, double the size of the Peace Corps, $100 billion to end the opioid crisis, $85 billion to massively expand broadband access. She's been taking a lot of hits on how she's going to pay for her Medicare for All plan, and I think that's a legitimate question. She has pledged in recent days that she's going to put forth some funding mechanism or formula. She's going to explain it in a white paper. But the same question, I think, holds for all of the other things that are listed on her website, because if you start looking at it in detail, there's a whole lot there.
Well, if the wealth tax is, let's even assume her revenue estimates are correct at $2.75 trillion, which I think is fanciful myself,
right.
But let's assume that it would raise that much. If it goes for those four things that I just mentioned, you still have, I mean, what else are you going to do to finance $32 trillion for Medicare for All, for example, over 10 years, and the other things that you mentioned? I guess it's going to come out. You could tax everything that Bill, you make and everything that Warren Buffett makes.
Right.
And you still couldn't finance it.
Right. I mean, that's the great dirty secret. Some of the other Democrats, I think, were hitting her on that she has to raise taxes on the middle class to get this. And she refuses to say that. As even Stephen Colbert said, for her, the smarter thing would to be to go the Bernie route. Say, yes, I'm going to raise taxes on these people, but overall, they'll be better off because we're going to reduce their medical costs and so forth even further.
That's where she'll be better, I think, don't you?
But she looks sort of dishonest now, not admitting that that's what she's going to do. And as you know, as you point out, all this talk about taxing billionaires, that's fanciful, because if you took all their money, the money is in the middle class, right? That's where you fund program. That's where you get it. And that's what they're going after. And this goes back to, remember Bill Clinton promised a middle class tax cut and then gave a middle class tax hike when he got in? Because they sort of have to with their spending plans.
Yeah, and that's the danger of, I mean, she's made her brand as I'm the person who has a plan for everything. But the danger of that is that one of her competitors is going to go through and actually add all that stuff up, and then make her explain how she's going to pay for it. And she's not going to have an answer, because the only answer, as far as I can see, is a European style value added tax or something. A broad consumption tax is the only way to get the money that she really needs.
And that's your job, Kyle, to add those all up. All right. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Kyle. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of Potomac Watch.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.